trouble in Zender world. Besides this. But it's consistent with what's been happening. Yesterday, I recorded Thursday's show, which was on the non-revival of the Roman Empire. An important show, I thought. So, as I always do, when I'm in my studio, I'm recording the video with my camera and the audio with my microphone plugged into the computer being recorded on, may God condemn it, to Hades, QuickTime. QuickTime has been a fair servant up until now. Yesterday, after a 40-minute show, I went to stop the audio, as I always do, and it said, cannot perform this function. And my audio disappeared. The audio went away. I went to all sorts of YouTube videos trying to figure out how to retrieve the audio. Couldn't do it. Audio was nowhere. So I was distraught. And I said, I'm either going to run the crappy audio off my phone, because at the same time, it's recording off my phone. I'm recording video and audio off my phone, but I'm recording the real audio, the good audio, into my computer, because you know how obsessive I am with quality, light and sound, you know, those basics. So, this morning I woke up with a better attitude. I said, well, it was a glitch. It never happened before. And I thought maybe it was because I had a small video that you're gonna see. I had a small video I made within the recording. I hit play on a video about the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. And I thought maybe that's what QuickTime didn't like. So I woke up with a new attitude today. I said, you know, I'm just gonna restart my computer. I'm gonna be brave and go forward. This won't happen again, because it's never happened before. Even when I've made long videos. I just finished another 40-minute presentation on the non-revival of the Roman Empire. Important video. It is an important video. And what do you think happened? I went to stop the audio recording. Same thing. This operation cannot be... So this is a God thing at this point. So I'm just going to run the video with the crappy audio. I'm going to start the video shortly here. I'm going to run it with the crappy audio. It's a God thing. I'm loath to do it because I'm about quality and the sound has to be good. And I love that microphone. You do too. And everything's been great, but not this. So since it's a God thing at this point, it's always been a God thing, but you know what I mean? I'm just going to run it with the crappy audio and see what God does with it. In the meantime, I'm never going to use QuickTime again. And somebody in my viewing audience, please tell me a dependable audio recorder. I'm running a Shure microphone through a Vocaster interface into my MacBook Pro into QuickTime. But QuickTime now has fallen into the sucks category. So please somebody tell me a better recording software, one that's not going to not record your audio. Thank you. And I present you now with Will There Be a Revival of the Roman Empire?
MZTV.
Should we be looking for a revival of the Roman Empire? No. Should we be looking for a push for ecumenicalism by the Pope as a sign that all the religions are going to come together? No. Was the Roman Empire ever a world empire? Was the Roman Empire part of Nebuchadnezzar's dream? Chapter 2, the metallic image. Wasn't the Roman Empire a world kingdom? No. Well, since I've already answered these questions, I think I will call it a day. No, just kidding. I know you want details, and I'm going to give you detailed information about the so-called Roman Empire and the so-called revival of the Roman Empire that the entire Christian world is looking for. The Christian world is always looking for the wrong thing. As I've said many times, they're looking for an ornate temple to be rebuilt. That'll go right under their noses because the temple will not be ornate. It will not be at the site of the Dome of the Rock. They are looking for an evil Antichrist, some slick, evil devil type person who will probably kick cats and have a handlebar mustache. No, that's not going to happen either. And they're definitely looking for a revival of the Roman Empire. So when that doesn't happen, they'll think that the end times aren't quite near enough because, as I told you, the Christians will fall headlong into the end time deception. And so it is so convenient of God to set yet another trap for them to have this false idea about the Roman Empire. I'm going to show you why it's a false idea. They have this false idea. And so because they're looking for something to appear on the horizon that's not here yet, they're going to assume that, well, the end time deception is not here yet because there's no world empire under Rome. And so therefore, we can eat, drink, and be merry. Well, no, not really, because you're going to fall, Christians, you're going to fall headlong into the actual deception, which will be Christianized. How many times have you heard them say the Antichrist is going to be Italian because he's going to be from Rome? He's got to be from Rome. This whole thing with the Roman Empire, it is totally false. Again, they're going to fall in love with the true Antichrist because it's going to be Satan, once again, disguised as a messenger of light. That's his modus operandi. Christians don't understand that at all. And so they're going to swallow the whole thing. They don't realize that they themselves are part of the operation of deception. And they're going to carry the day. And they're going to carry the water for the beast system. They'll be a part of it. And they'll be so into it. They are going to love it, even at the same time looking for it. They're going to be looking for it. And this is absolutely amazing. They are going to be looking for the end time deception while they are busy forwarding it. Just by being religious, just by pushing for the forwarding of the new government that will, in the very, very near future, rescue us from the terrible government that we have now. So it's so amazing to see another trap being set for organized religion, for those who get their doctrine out of a drive-through window, for those who really don't look deeply into the Word of God, for those who love tradition more than truth. And so I sure as heck don't want any of you thinking that there will be a revived Roman Empire. I bring this up because two of our brothers in my video 2 days ago mentioned that they believed that the Roman Empire would be revived and that the Antichrist will be someone like the Pope who will be pushing for, suggesting, singing songs about all religions uniting. It's not going to be that way at all. Religions will unite, but it will not be because some Pope-like figure strums kumbaya on his ukulele. It will be because the West, with mechanized destruction, as Daniel says, iron teeth and copper claws, the West will crush the East. It will amalgamate the other religions after stamping them down. And so it is not going to be a gentle call to ecumenicalism, not at all. Let me start by reading the comments from our brothers. And I'm glad they comment. As you know, I invite all sorts of comments, and this is a great teaching moment. I did not know any of our friends here were looking for a revived Roman Empire. I mean, it's a common belief. I can see why it's popular. From Robert Lakey, who's a good friend of mine, makes some great comments. But here he says, I try, But when reading Daniel 7, before that, as you know, I've been teaching that Daniel 7, with the four animals, in the Concordant Version calls them animals, I think the King James says beasts, come out of the sea. I said that these were four religions, not four national blocks, four religions. And along that line, I was looking for this chart the other day. I couldn't find it, but thanks to Rob Weil in Canada, he sent me this. I remembered how great this chart was. Here's a picture of it. And I couldn't figure out why is this so great. And then I remembered, wait a minute, I designed this back in 2009. I totally forgot. I was looking at it and I said, this is a great chart. Oh, it's mine from 2009. So what I'm gonna do, this explains to you everything. Look, there's a world map here. It shows you how these four religions go from east to west as they are presented to Daniel coming out of the sea. The sea being typical of tumultuous humanity, and the four winds coming forth being typical of malevolent spirits. And so I'm going to put a link down here, and you can go to that link and you can get an enlarged photo of this graph, this map, this explanation. I have all the beasts, all the animals listed there, all their characteristics and how they fit. And again, how amazing it is that these four religions progress from east to west. This is significant because Daniel said the eastern beast, I'm quoting the man now, the eastern beast was a lioness, as a lioness. And so don't forget, link down there. If you're confused about it, if you still think that Daniel 7 is a repetition of Daniel 2, it's not. Daniel 2, the metallic image, has to do with the political supremacy on the earth. Daniel 7, with the religious supremacy on the earth. It's not a repetition. Why would God repeat in Daniel 7 what he did in Daniel 2? Daniel 2 was Nebuchadnezzar's dream. Daniel 7 was a vision that was given to Daniel. So these are two different things, and there are many, many Christians, almost all of them, they make the four animals, the four beasts of Daniel 7, the same as the four world kingdoms as portrayed by Nebuchadnezzar's image in chapter 2. That's not true. Okay, let's go back to Mr. Lakey's comment. I tried, but when reading Daniel 7, I do not see religions at all. Simply the kingdoms of the Babylonian, Medes through Greek kingdoms, Rome, and then the final kingdom of the Antichrist. I'm going to show you how Rome was never a world kingdom, and it is not part of the metallic image of Daniel chapter 2. I do see in Revelation a final world religion, which looks to me like the Catholic religion, led by the false prophet, a pope like the present one, who in the last few years has been encouraging a unification of world religions. And as I told you, world religions will indeed be unifying, but it won't be by an encouragement by a guy wearing a Halloween costume in Rome. Note the word Catholic simply means universal. And Mark Haukes, the pirate, the legendary pirate, he agrees with Mr. Lakey, saying, hi Robert, you summed up the basics of how I see Daniel 7. Well, I'm going to change these gentlemen's minds today. That's how confident I am. And if anyone is thinking of a revived Roman Empire, or that the Roman Empire ever was a world empire in the mold of Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece, well, I will change your mind today on MZTV. Welcome to the show, by the way. I'm Martin Zender. Okay, I never said that, did I? Well, you probably already figured it out. Mark goes on to say, the Roman Catholic Church appears to be the driving force of this world religion, but I'm not sure how that will play out in particulars. Driving force? The Catholic Church is not a driving force in anything. It is neutered. The Pope has no power. The Catholic Church and the Pope is a cartoon. I don't see where this driving force, where Mark gets this idea of a driving force of these world religions. Of course, the Pope comments on occasion about how nice it would be, bring, bring, as he strums his ukulele, for the world to come together, bring, bring, in one happy family. Yes, the priests the Brahmins, the rabbis, the pastors, Joel Osteen, won't be wonderful. No. I mean, it is going to happen, but it's going to happen by force. By force. And I'm going to show you that when I go to the scriptures. So my main goal is to make sure that you're looking for the right thing and that you're not deceived with the rest of the world. So now let's go to the scriptures. The first thing I want to show you is in Daniel chapter 7. Of course, I've read this verse earlier this week, but I read this verse to prove to you that this unification of the four religions will not be the result of encouragement by the Pope. And Daniel 7, verse 7, in place of this, I was perceiving in the visions of the night, and behold, a fourth animal, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly mighty. She had monstrous iron teeth, and she was devouring and crushing and stamping upon the remainder with her feet, the remainder of the beast, the remainder of them, the rest of them. This is another reason why I say that this dream, this vision Daniel had, is so different from Nebuchadnezzar's dream, because in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, he dreamt of a great metallic image with four parts. Christians think there are five parts. That's part of the trick here. Christians think there are five world kingdoms portrayed by the metallic image. You better believe I'm going to go to Daniel chapter 2 and show you how that is not the case. And it is certainly not the case that the amalgamation of the four religions of the earth will be a great move of peace inspired by the Pope. No. It is a crushing and stamping upon the remainder. Oh, I know what I wanted to say. Yes, these are contemporaneous. These four animals, I mentioned this before, these four beasts are existent at the same time. That has to be the case for the fourth beast, Christianity, which is Christianity, the most Western beast, to stamp the remainder of them. They're still existing when the fourth beast rises to power. In chapter 2 of Daniel, on the other hand, we have successive kingdoms. First the Babylonian Empire, then the Medo-Persian Empire, then the Grecian Empire, and then a yet future empire. I'm going to show you where Christians go wrong on this, and I don't want anybody to be looking for something that's not going to happen. We are looking at, a violent conquering. So let's go to Daniel chapter 2. I'm going to poke fun at the Pope a little later. I'm going to show you the Pope does have power. I'm going to show you the power that he does have a little later in this video. I'm going to go to Daniel chapter 2, and let's start in verse 36. This is the dream, and its interpretation shall we state before the king. You, O king, are the king of kings, you to whom the Eloah of the heavens has granted a safeguarded kingdom and might and honor and esteem. Wherever they are abiding, the sons of mortals, the animal of the field, the flyer of the heavens, and the fish of the sea, he has granted them into your hand and has given you authority over them all. You yourself are the head of gold. I want you to look here right away. This is a criteria for a worldwide kingdom. Wherever they are abiding, the sons of mortals, i.e. human beings, even the animals of the field, wherever they might be, the flyers of the heavens, the fish of the sea, you are over them all, King Nebuchadnezzar. Now that is a world kingdom. In your place, verse 39, another kingdom shall arise inferior to you, that is silver, and another kingdom, the third, that is copper, which shall have authority in all the earth. Now, before I get to the fourth kingdom, this is very important. This is the kingdom that the Christians split into two. I'm going to show you how they do it and why they do it. I should have done this right away, but let me just reveal to you again Nebuchadnezzar's dream. You, O king, were perceiving, and lo, one great image. The image was grand, its aspect excelling, set up in your view, and its appearance was terrifying. This image, its head was of good gold, its chest and its arms were of silver, its belly and its thighs of copper, its legs of iron, its feet, part of them of iron, part of them of clay. You were perceiving until a stone was severed from a mountain, not by hands, and it collided with the image at its feet of iron and clay and pulverized them. Then all at once the iron, the clay, the copper, the silver, and the gold were pulverized and became as chaff from summer threshing sites, and the wind lifted them up, and no trace at all was found of them. Back to the interpretation. The fourth kingdom shall be mighty as iron. Now, let me mention that the second kingdom of silver, it was an inferior kingdom because silver is inferior to gold, and yet it was nevertheless a world kingdom, and so it had the same qualifications for a world kingdom as mentioned by Daniel concerning Nebuchadnezzar, which is authority over every human being, every animal, every bird, every fish. This was the same thing under Cyrus and the Medo-Persian Empire. And the third kingdom, the belly and thighs of copper, being Alexander the Great. These are historical kingdoms. They're in the history books. Anybody can look them up. And they were all headquartered in Babylon. There's another thing Christians are looking for. I don't blame them for looking for this. They're looking for the city of Babylon to be rebuilt. But I don't see anywhere in Scripture where the phrase "the rebuilding of Babylon" occurs. Babylon is a city, but again, I believe this city to be underground. There's nothing that says a city can't be underground. Where does everyone safeguard their treasures? Underground. All the world's secrets. Wherever these people, whoever these people are, who have amassed all this wealth and all this control and whatever machinery or technology they may need to control the inhabitants of the world. It is whatever physical thing needs to be housed somewhere, it will be housed in Babylon underground. This is my sincere belief. It's not going to be some ornate city like Dubai. That's what people are looking for. It doesn't make sense. If there's any physical treasure or any physical technology, it would have to be safe. And anything of worth, of value, is kept underground. Underground, Hitler's underground bunker. The underground bunkers at the White House, Fort Knox. Even Lincoln's body is like 18 feet under the ground. Yeah, he gets extra depth there because he was a great man. Everything of value is under the ground. So I think there are many operations we don't even realize that are under the ground. So, I mean, like, I'm not talking about moles digging in the dirt. I'm talking about, like, strongholds, ornate, even living spaces, what have you. They can still be destroyed. The smoke of the destruction of Babylon can still rise. A blown up bunker smokes just as much as a blown up city, above the ground city, does it not? Why Babylon? Why would they bother going to Babylon? Because that's where the other world kingdoms were. It'll be a thing of pride. Like, if we're going to do this, let's go to where Nebuchadnezzar was. I mean, this is the greatness they aspire to. This is the level of hubris, of pride, of human exaltation. They're not going to settle for anything else. Paramus, New Jersey, Oshkosh, Wisconsin, not even New York City. Babylon's the place to be. That's where the other world kingdoms were. Damn it, that's where we're going to be. This is my thinking on the matter. I just can't see it any other way. An ornate city to me seems ridiculous. And nowhere do we see that this city is going to be rebuilt. Look for the word rebuilt in the unveiling of Jesus Christ. You won't find it. The fourth kingdom shall be mighty as iron, for as much as iron is pulverizing and overcoming everything. So like iron that smashes, it shall pulverize and smash all of these. Listen to this, verse 41, Daniel chapter 2. As you perceive the feet and toes, part of them of potter's clay and part of them of iron, so shall the kingdom be composite. The kingdom? So shall the kingdom be composite? Yes, because The kingdom spoken of in verse 41 is the same kingdom of verse 40. In other words, the legs and the feet are one kingdom. But what does Christianity do? They separate. They say the legs of iron were another world kingdom, and they say it was the Roman Empire. Let me go at this time to the Christian interpretation. And then here's what they say. Because the iron is mentioned again in the feet, they see that there's some remnant. Since the legs are made of iron and the feet are iron and clay. Oh, we see iron. Must be a revival of what? Of what we believe the iron legs to be, which is what? The Roman Empire. I'm at a site now called gotquestions.org. Let me read to you the Christian viewpoint on this. The term revived Roman Empire, which is not used in Scripture, that might be your first clue that something might be amiss here. Refers to a powerful government predicted in biblical prophecy. This regime will rise to power and dominate the world during the end times. Will it? According to various interpretations of the books of Daniel and Revelation, the revived Roman Empire is either a generic world political system or a specific nation under a specific ruler. Various interpreters have centered this empire in Rome itself, in Turkey, or in the Middle East. It's not going to be in Rome. It's not going to be in Turkey. It will be in the Middle East. That is Babylon. The revived Roman Empire is commonly associated with the fourth beast of Daniel chapter 7. I've told you that's not the case. This beast is described as, quote, terrifying and frightening and very powerful. This ten-horned beast is a prophetic picture of the Roman Empire. No, it's not. I'm going to show you a short little video of the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. It's quite embarrassing for the Roman Empire. I apologize to anybody who was a part of the Roman Empire. It's going to be very embarrassing, especially if you've told your great, 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 great grandchildren that you had a world empire like unto Nebuchadnezzar's. You did not. It was embarrassingly small, comprised only 3 continents. But I think there's more than 3 continents. Last time I counted. The ten-horned beast is a prophetic picture of the Roman Empire. But as Daniel watches, a little horn rises from the beast with eyes like the eyes of a human being and a mouth that spoke boastfully. This final horn is the Antichrist, who will somehow be connected with the Roman Empire. How many times have you heard Christians say that the Antichrist is going to be Italian? He's going to be eating spaghetti in Rome before he rises to power. He's going to be like the Mafia. Let me tell you something. I'm the Antichrist. You don't cross me, you understand? He's going to be like a Mafia thug. No. Not at all. Since the Roman Empire has been defunct since the 5th century, we expect it to be revived in some way to fulfill the end time prophecies. No, Christians, you're going to fulfill the end time prophecies. At the same time, you're looking for the Roman Empire to be revived. You're going to be actually the ones reviving the final world empire, but it'll be in your midst. It'll be Christianized, sacralized. Satan disguised as a messenger of light. But of course, you don't know any of that. So you're going to be forbidding the very thing you are warning people about, just like the Pharisees. You're so much like the Pharisees in every single way. The Pharisees told the people, "We'll tell you when the Messiah arrives." They made themselves the mother of all Messiah detectors. And then what did they do? They killed the Messiah when he came. He was right in front of them. These Christians will be living in and promoting the final world kingdom. It's going to be operating in their midst. And while that's going on, they'll be scanning the parapets, waiting for the revival of the Roman Empire. No, it's already happening. It's going to take them completely unawares. Completely. And when the tribulation starts in earnest, in the middle of the last 7 years, I just can't even imagine the appalling shock and the sickness and the weeping and the gnashing of teeth and the love of many growing cold. I feel pang of pain for it. I don't take any joy in telling you about it. It's sad. It's extremely sad. And they're going to be waiting for the snatching away 3 years after the snatching away. They'll be looking for the Roman Empire and waiting for the snatching away. After the snatching away has already occurred, and while the final world empire is operating in their midst, and because of their contributions. It's just terrible. The revived Roman Empire has also been linked to the fifth and final kingdom mentioned in Daniel chapter 2. But there is no fifth and final kingdom. They see the feet of iron and clay as a separate kingdom, a fifth kingdom separate from the legs of iron. But as I just told you, I'm going to read it again in Daniel chapter 2. The fourth kingdom shall be mighty as iron. This is the iron legs. For as much as iron is pulverizing and overcoming everything, so like iron that smashes, it shall pulverize and smash all these. As you perceive the feet and toes, part of them of potter's clay and part of them of iron, so shall the kingdom be composite. The kingdom, referring to the same kingdom of verse 40. Verse 41, speaking of the feet of iron and clay, is speaking of the same kingdom of verse 40. The legs and the feet are all one kingdom. That's where they're making a mistake. They make two mistakes here. One, thinking that the legs and the feet are separate kingdoms, and two, thinking that the legs of iron is an historical kingdom, namely the Roman Empire. But the Roman Empire was never a world kingdom. Again, hang on, I'm going to show you that. It was never a world kingdom. So they're making two giant mistakes here. So let's go back to the article at gotanswers.org, gotnothing.oops. The revived Roman Empire has been linked to the fifth and final kingdom mentioned in Daniel chapter 2. This passage concerns Nebuchadnezzar's dream of an image made of various metals. The iron legs represent the Roman Empire, so you say. Let's just do it now. Let's just do it now. Put this to rest. I'm going to show you a quick little video here of the spread of the Roman Empire, the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. We're going to go from like 560 BC to 1500 AD. And you're going to see that the peak of the Roman Empire was around the year 117 AD under Trajan. Trajan was, yes, one of the emperors of Rome. And he brought the Roman Empire to its apex between, and it stayed at its apex and grew a little bit more between 117 and 140 AD. And then when Commodus took over the throne or the crown or whatever the heck these emperors take over in 180 AD, things really started falling apart. That was happened under Commodus. Besides being a Roman emperor, he was also the inventor of the toilet. Commodus was indeed, in my opinion, fall of Rome can be due to Commodus spending too much time inventing the toilet. That's just me. Here's the video.
Okay, let's look at our handy dandy Roman Empire motion map here. We're going to show the rise and fall of the Roman Empire beginning around the 500s BC and action. Okay, let's bring it back. There we go. Bring it back to 510. BC. There you see Rome. You see that little orange spot? That's Rome that's growing. Look at that. 300 BC to 70 BC. Lots of action here. 140 BC, 70 BC, 40, 20. So now we're into the ADs, 71, 140. There's the full extent of the Roman Empire under Trajan in 117 is the extent. Now look at what happens. Where's the Roman Empire going? 480 AD, 500, 600, 650. Very sad. Very sad. It's going to move back. Oh, there's a little expanse there. Man. The old good old days. 1200, 1300, 1400. Oh, there it goes. It got blown up under Commodus. Commodus in rule from 180 to 192. AD, he screwed it all up. He was too busy inventing the toilet. Commodus was. He was the emperor of Rome, but he was also inventing the toilet. So look at this. Here it is. Here's the map. Here's the glory days between, 117, 140 under Trajan. Trajan ruled until 117. He did a pretty good job. But look, it is definitely not the whole earth. In fact, I'll read this to you by AD 117, the Roman Empire had reached its maximum extent. And there it is. That's the maximum. Spanning three continents. Wait a minute. Aren't there more than three continents? Yes. Okay, I thought so. Spanning three continents, including Asia Minor, Northern Africa, and most of Europe. Wait a minute. If you're a world kingdom, don't you have to take over all of Europe? What is this? Most of Europe. So even at its apex, at its best, the Roman Empire was never a world empire.
So that should put to rest any ideas out there that anybody has, including our brothers, that the Roman Empire was ever a world empire. And as I said, three continents doesn't cut it. The fact that it shares the element iron, here you go, the fact that it shares the element iron with the fourth kingdom suggests a connection to Rome. And the ten toes could imply a ten-nation confederacy, matching the ten horns in Daniel 7, verse 20, led collectively by a single powerful ruler. Two short paragraphs left here. Other commentators point to Revelation chapter 13, which describes a beast coming from the sea having ten horns and seven heads. This depiction connects it to the fourth beast of Daniel 7, which also has ten horns. Yes, the fourth beast of Daniel 7 is a religious entity that joins forces with the world empire. This is what John saw. He saw the harlot riding on the back of the beast. He was shocked, couldn't believe it. It was apostate Israel riding on top of the nations and actually commandeering the nations. It was illicit, as I've said before, for a Jew to commingle with the nations, let alone commit adultery. This is why John was shocked by the vision. Revelation describes this government as blasphemous, verse 1, and tyrannical, requiring absolute submission in financial, spiritual, and political matters. That's true, and Christians will give it all of that gladly because they will see it as a move of Christ, because the mark of the beast will probably be something very innocuous, very happy, even might be a cross. It might be a tattoo also underneath the skin. They will take it gladly because it will represent a Christian kingdom. I can't emphasize this enough. The final deception will be Christianized. It has to be in order that for the elect to be deceived, if it were possible. See, that's always my go-to verse to when I'm trying to discern what this end time kingdom will be. If the elect who are sharp on the ball, knowing scripture, reading properly translated scripture, if we could be deceived, if we're like, I don't know, this looks pretty good, I kind of like this, then you know that that's the final deception. But if we're rolling our eyes, saying, oh, this is so utterly evil, it's so utterly pathetic and weak and ignoble and dirty and sinful and lying and thieving and stealing, that's not the final world kingdom. The global power this nation wields is given to it by Satan. That's true. And I remind you, Satan is disguised as a messenger of light. In this context, the symbols are more easily interpreted as references to a particular ruler and a particular political empire yet to come, rather than some figure of prior history. Here's the last paragraph. Thank God. You ready? Speculation about the exact nature of the revived Roman Empire. See, it's the assumption they're suing it throughout this whole article without proving it. Can be interesting. Speculation about the exact nature of the revived Roman Empire can be interesting, but we must remember to keep the right perspective. Our primary focus as Christians is supposed to be spreading the gospel. Yes, you're supposed to spread the gospel, turn and burn. Please pay attention to your first priority. Your first priority is to scare the shit out of everyone. Try to scare them into Christ by painting God as a tyrant who must be loved in return. He's codependent. He loves you, but you have to love him. And if you don't, he has a mean streak. He's got to send you to hell for eternity. That's what you should be focusing on. Scaring people. That's your gospel, turn or burn. It's not a presentation of grace. It's not a presentation of the accomplishment of the cross. According to you people, the cross didn't accomplish anything. That's part of your gospel. The cross only made it possible for you to do your part and save yourself. And this you call salvation by grace. No, it's salvation by saving yourself, by believing in Jesus. That's your gospel. You have to be about that business. Don't waste time thinking about the revival of the Roman Empire, you need to be concentrating on turn or burn. You need to be traveling far and wide to all these poor countries who have never heard of your crap, of your bad news. And as soon as you tell it to them, they then become liable for rejecting Jesus. According to you, they couldn't have gone to hell before, because how could they reject Jesus if they've never heard of Jesus? You come along teaching them about Jesus, do or die, turn or burn, and now you're giving them less than a 50-50 chance of going to heaven. Why didn't you just leave them the hell alone in their little huts wearing their banana peels and let them live their lives happily? No, because your church spends thousands of dollars sending you to the far corners of the earth to make proselytes of other people, at which time you make them double the sons of Gehenna as you are. That's what you should be concentrating on. Our primary focus as Christians is supposed to be spreading the gospel, not trying to identify the Antichrist. In particular, we should realize that what's written about the revived Roman Empire in the Bible is not very extensive. Oh, I could laugh at this, but I'm not going to because it's sad. What's written about? We admit that what is written about the revived Roman Empire in the Bible is not very extensive. That's a nice way of saying it doesn't exist. I'll admit, not existing is not very extensive. I'll give you that. And we can't go beyond what's written. Why stop now? Your whole gospel is beyond what is written. You believe the traditions of man rather than the truth of God. You love your traditions and your doctrines of demons. You're now concerned about going beyond what is written? We know the Antichrist is coming, and we know he will have some connection to the ancient Roman Empire. There you go again with the ancient Roman Empire. Possibly through ancestry, geography, or the structure of his government. We can read the signs of the times. No, you can't, but we don't know enough to be dogmatic in the details. No, you don't know anything. You don't know anything.com. GodAnswers.org. Oh, GodQuestions.org, sorry. That was at GodQuestions.org. If you want to read that, it's called What is the Revived Roman Empire? So now, let me just finish reading Daniel chapter 2, because it's really interesting about the iron mixed with clay. As you perceive the feet and toes, part of them of potter's clay, part of them of iron. And again, this is a future kingdom. This is a future kingdom. So shall the kingdom be composite. Some of the stability of iron shall be in it, for as much as you perceive the iron mixed with the muddy clay. As for the toes and the feet, part of them of iron and part of them of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly mighty, yet part of it shall be frail. And listen to the next verse as to why the kingdom will be frail. Let me repeat this again. As you perceive the feet and toes, part of them of potter's clay, part of them of iron, so shall the kingdom be composite. Some of the stability of iron shall be in it, for as much as you perceive the iron mixed with the muddy clay. But as for the toes and the feet, part of iron, part of clay, the kingdom will be partly mighty, yet part of it shall be frail. Verse 43, listen to this. As you perceive the iron mixed with the muddy clay, so they shall be mixed together, wealth with the armed force of the mortal. Yet to wealth they shall not be clinging, this one with that one, even as iron does not mix with clay. This is, you won't read this translation any other place, but I'm reading out of the Concordant version of the Old Testament. Go to concordant.org on the homepage. You can see, read the Old Testament for free. I'm reading this in Daniel. You'll never read this translation anywhere else. Daniel 2:43, as to what the iron represents and what the clay represents. Iron mixed with muddy clay, they shall be mixed together, wealth with the armed force of the mortal. And I told you that every successive kingdom is of an inferior metal. Gold gives way to silver, silver gives way to copper, copper gives way to iron. How are these inferior metals able to take over a superior metal? And of course, the metal is all metaphoric for the measure of the strength of the nobility, I would even say, of these kingdoms. It's this, because every subsequent kingdom has more money and more force The kingdoms don't take over because of some great nobility or some great vision or some beating of the heart to give the people what they want. Food and plenty, peace and prosperity. No, it's the fact that they have lots of money and lots of weapons. Wealth with the armed force of the mortal. That's what the clay and the iron represent. This kingdom starts strong. Legs of iron start strong. But then when it gets to the end, it is weak because the more it goes, the richer it becomes, which you would think, wow, that's good. No, that's bad. And the more power it has, but wealth does not mix with the armed force of the mortal. That is what the word of God says. And that's why this kingdom will be weak at the end, and it will be destroyed by God. And I love that from the word of God. Now, this has been a heavy video. I'm going to end with a light note. I did find out, in fact, that the Pope does have authority, does have power, does wield control over a kingdom. And that kingdom is Vatican City. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Vatican City. 120 acres with a population of 764 people. This is the kingdom ruled by the Pope. This is the power of the Pope today. Vatican City, he controls all of every single acre of the 121 acres. And the 764 people in Vatican City look up to him, do homage to him, obey him. He's the sovereign Lord and the great influencer of Vatican City. And if you were to ask me for a number, like what, how could you possibly measure the power of the Pope, the great influence of the Pope? There is a measure. I found this, and the answer is, I'm not even joking, the power of the Pope is 100 megawatts. Hold on. About a decade ago, the Vatican spent $660 million on a massive 100 megawatt photovoltaic installation that would effectively be Europe's largest solar power plant. Now complete and in operation, the installation of this array has not only made Vatican City the first solar-powered nation state in the world, but according to the state's official newspaper, it is now the greenest state in the world. Congratulations, Pope. As Vatican City is also the smallest state in the world, 121 acres. Not a big country, not a big state there, but the Pope can now power all of its households with renewable energy. Ah, the Pope. This guy, I'll tell you one thing. I may not know for sure who the Antichrist is going to be, but it's not going to be Mr. 100 megawatt.